They say one time around is all you get, but I'm still dancing, so you lost your bet. Welcome to Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. My name is Corey Morissette, joined as always by my good buddy John Mariano. How are you tonight, John?
Confused.
Why?
Three amigos, three collabros, whatever Donald Duck called his little music group. You know, three musketeers. Like, the threes go on and on and on and on. And tonight, four? Like Ninja Turtles? Like, what are we tonight? What's the deal?
Four Horsemen? I don't know.
Oh, I like that.
There you go.
Can we roll with that? The Four Horsemen?
We can roll with that. So, John Mariano, your horseman number two. Let's introduce our co-host here, all the way from Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. Scott Haskin. How are you doing tonight, Scott?
Doing great, you guys. After last week's episode, I thought we needed a supervisor. So I have had the pleasure of inviting my good friend from the Deep Purple podcast, one half of the hosting team, John Mottola, to the show. John, how are you?
Hey, great. Thank you. Thanks, guys, for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. Yeah, My gateway drug into the Deep Dive podcast network was your show.
We're so excited to have you, John. Scott has been... It's like been his goal since he's joined us to make sure that I'm not as unique as I think I am. I'm pretty sure that's the reason why he invited you on.
And you're both East Coast guys, so I'm trying to make it as confusing as possible.
No, you're also making it very hurtful. Like, I'm not the only John. I'm not the only East Coaster. John, what else do you have going for you? Like, please tell me you like pizza and bagels and stuff like me, because I might as well just dial out now.
Yeah, I mean, pizza, bagels, beer, what else? Sweets, big sweets guy.
This is so very hurtful to my ego right now. But John, welcome to the show. In all seriousness, we are thrilled to have you. Scott's been hyping this for us for a couple of weeks now. I don't know how many episodes we've promoted it or whatever, because I don't even know what month it is that we're actually recording this for. That's kind of how this show works.
Yeah. Well, great. Thanks, Scott. No pressure. I feel no pressure. No, that's I'm really excited to be on. I love the chance to be on other podcasts and talk music with like-minded people. So, and I really enjoy you, really enjoy the show. And I can't wait to be a part of today's episode.
Perfect. You know, we're going to have to differentiate between the Johns. So we'll have old John for John Mariano John for John Mottola.
I actually have a recommendation.
Okay.
Tonight only. Because it's my favorite thing to do during the day. If you could refer to me, since there's two Johns, I would like to be known as the Deuce the rest of the episode. This is my favorite activity to do during the day.
Dropping
and I
deuces?
Thought it was going to be a masturbation reference.
Well, you know, I love you because your deuces are wild.
I was going to say, you could just call me Jimmy Crespo, or if you want.
Richie Supa, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, John, while we got you on the air, better, John, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Deep Purple podcast and what you got going on over there?
So for anybody that doesn't know, the Deep Purple podcast was a project founded by myself and my good friend Nate, who lives out in Chicago. We grew up here in Rhode Island together, and we started it. I think it was Nate and I are debating about this because we're... how long ago it was, because he said we're going on 4 years. I think it's 3 years we're going on. Scott, you would probably know better, right? Didn't we start in 2019?
I think so. I'm going to try and find the first episode date
I think it was 2019. But
I know it's been at least 3 years, because I've lived here for 2.5 and you guys were already up and running.
Okay.
Before I moved. So actually, I can look back at when you guys came on my show. Because
I'm pretty sure it was
around too long.
But we've been doing it for a few years. I think it's coming up on three years next year, 3 or 4 years. And we grew up as teenagers listening to amongst other bands, Deep Purple, and you know, we were always been intrigued by the Deep Purple family, all the different offshoots of bands that came from them. Because as anybody that listens to the podcast knows, it's not just the Deep Purple proper, as we call it. These musicians have all gone off and done so many projects with so many people. There's so many kind of 6 degrees of separation that we could go on for years talking about them. So we do everything from reviewing albums to having on we've had on some interviews, guest hosts. We've done a game show. We've done one of Scott's favorite episodes, Coverdale Tweets.
Yes.
So we always try and do things very you know, break it up and do things that are interesting, exciting. We've done like live casts with concerts and had on Patreon subscribers. So it's just really been a passion project for us. A great way to just get together and talk about the band that we love and all the musicians that we love since we were you know, kids.
So I looked it up, and it looks like you guys were on my show November 28th of 2019, and you had done, it was less than, I think, 15 episodes of your show. So that would be around your start date.
Yeah, we started around April, I believe. So,
Very nice. Well, I know, you know, with all due respect to everybody on the Deep Dive Podcasting Network, they all do a fantastic job. I always kind of considered the Deep Purple podcast kind of the gold standard. That's kind of the level, the upper echelon that I know for me and my shows, we're trying to reach. So thank you very much for slumming it here tonight, coming down to the down in the ruts, if you will, to hang out with us Aerosmith folk.
And I just want to, You know, really hit home what Corey's saying. So when Corey was selling me on what he and Mark were doing over at the Van Halen side of the town and wanted me to get back into podcasting, he specifically pointed to your podcast on this network, right? And like, it was a major, it's like his belief system, right? Or his ideal was built off of that premise. Right. And wow. And he talked about you with such conviction that he made it impossible for me to say no, because Corey can tell you, I was so far out on wanting to podcast. Yeah. Right. He literally had to drag me kicking and screaming to do this. And I love it. And I can't stop now again. But like, yeah. Corey, like part of Corey's premise was your podcast. And respectfully to everybody else, you know, everybody busts their ass. Like none of us are making dick to show up. We're doing it because we love this stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, poor Scott got roped into hanging out with us so much now. I owe him a check of like $250 at least for like hanging out, like just being around me, right? like this place is so cool because it's a place to celebrate bands. It's like we used to go to record stores to do what we're doing here now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool because in Corey's words, like to me, like you're what turned him on to this. And without that, none of this happens.
Well, that's a great compliment, and I thank you guys for that. And I have to, I definitely have to give props to our the co-host on the show, or the host, because I always introduce as the co-host is Nate. He is really the one that drives the quality of the show. He does 99% of the work in terms of the editing, coming up with the concepts, putting the episode out, managing the social media. Like he's a really huge part of it. I mean, it definitely takes both of us to make it up, but he works very hard on it, and he definitely has more of a life than I do. He's got a wife, 3 kids, very busy life. So how he fits it all in and this and everything else he does is just nothing short of amazing. So
So wait, time out. We're paying you all heaps of compliments here, John.
Yeah.
And are you guys trying to tell me this is extra hurtful now that you have premium? I'm calling you premium East Coast John. You bring on the show, and Nate does all the heavy lifting, and we could have had Nate, and then I could have been the only John on the show again. What's going on, guys?
Well, I mean, I'm the personality, so I mean, you know, it's
Well, Nate gets it to the line, and John pushes it over.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like the what am I, the comedic foil? And
there
like
you go.
Nate's the straight man, or vice versa. It doesn't work without both of us, but yeah, I'm definitely a pivotal part of the show. So don't worry, older John, or what are we calling him? Original John. Deuces.
The deuces.
The deuce. Don't worry about it. I'm still going to deliver today. Don't worry.
Oh no. It sounds very much like mine and Corey's relationship. Corey does all the work, all the research. Yeah. He has all the technical stuff. He has all the knowledge. He has all the personality. And then I'm there.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have somebody like Scott, who's an all-in-one. He does everything, and it's even more amazing than all of us. So you know what? We should all bow to him.
Yes.
Well, I just keep talking, whether anyone's listening or not. There's no one here to shut me up. You know?
Yeah.
No, because Scott's everything Corey is, and he's somehow also a musician. Like, an actual, like Scott, go fuck yourself. Like, Scott's basically our Chris
for a while.
Wait, no, but Scott's our Chris Hemsworth, right? Like, you can't be that good looking, that much in shape, and also be that funny and that talented. Like, that's why Scott's like, go fuck yourself.
Well, OG John, in all fairness, you have better hair than I do.
I mean, that's fair, but it didn't stop. It's everywhere. Right, like I could go topless, and you guys would see gorilla hair.
And this is an audio podcast, so you guys don't know that he isn't.
Well, thank God he isn't, because we have a guest on now. Let's get this train back on the tracks if we can. Scott, usually about this time in the show, we throw to you, and you can tell the folks about all of our favorite shows on the Deep Dive Podcasting Network. Take it away.
Our growing list of brothers and one sister on the Deep Dive Podcast Network is just absolutely amazing. Obviously, we've got John here and his buddy Nate from the Deep Purple Podcast. We have myself at Uriah Heep, the Magician's Podcast. We have Skinnerd Reconsidered, T-Bone's Prime Cuts on the other side, Sabbath Bloody Podcast, In the Lap of the Pods, Hawk Binge, Maiden A to Z, Diary of the Mad Men, the ultimate Aussie podcast, Universally Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers Podcast, George and Hattie at the Judas Priest Cast, Mark and Corey at the And the Podcast Will Rock Show. We have John, Corey, and myself at this very show, Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. I said I wasn't going to mention our own show anymore, so I blew that. And then we have John and Corey at Backtracks Theme Music, where I might pop up from time to time. And of course, we have the North by South Podcast, So Far, So Pod, So What, the Tom Petty Project, and Volume for All. And last but certainly not least, Rock Roulette Podcast, where they spin a similar wheel to the Van Halen show. Really good wheels, stuff.
Wheels are all the rage now. I know Kevin Brown also does a Queen show called Seaside Pod Review. They spin a wheel. Rock Roulette spins a wheel. Everybody has a wheel. So that's why we went to Dice for the Aerosmith show. We're trying to come up with a new MacGuffin here. And speaking of MacGuffins, let's go to Deuces, Shitstain, whatever you wanted to call himself. We're going to let him do the sponsor copy here this week. I'm sure he's ready for it. Tell us about Pop Rock and Radio.
Who, me? Okay.
Yeah, you.
Yeah, all right. Well, so our buddy Ken Knapsack does a little show called Pop Rock and Radio. It's the big hits, album cuts, and B-sides from the rock and pop world that make up the soundtracks of our lives. Look for live shows and make requests. Sing, dance, and celebrate the music with the Pop Rock and Radio community. Download the Mixcloud app today and check Ken out, because he is spinning records every Saturday night.
Great job, Toonses. Okay, let's get back to Aerosmith now. What always happens when you bring a guest on is we let the guest pick the six songs that are going to go on this week's die. So we put our regular die aside, and we let Better John pick six songs. And I tell you, he picked a really eclectic six songs. I'm really excited about this dice here tonight. I'll list them out, and then Better John, maybe you can tell us why you kind of went down this path. First of all, looking at your songs, I could tell you're a Joe Perry fan because you picked two Joe Perry songs. So first of all, we have One Way Street from the debut album, Bright Light Fright, which is a Joe song from Draw the Line, Chiquita from Night in the Ruts, Taste of India from Nine Lives, Heart's Done Time from Permanent Vacation, and another Joe song, Walk On Down from Get a Grip. So maybe tell us about why you chose those six tracks.
When I was tasked with having to choose for the dice, I was thinking, what are some of my favorite songs? And I never like to go down the road of picking the popular ones, because of course I like the hits and I like the popular ones all throughout the years, but I figured, like, you guys have done a lot of those, and so I'm definitely a deep tracks guy, and you know, I wanted to pick throughout the years some of my favorite songs, like ones that have kind of made an impression on me, or you know, have been in the playlist more often than others. And like you said, there are a couple of Joe songs, because I love his vocals and performances on those two songs, and then just a couple of those outlier albums and songs I just think are really interesting, and, you know, could add a lot more than just me picking What It Takes or something that we've all heard a million times.
Well, and that's good, because we are trying to populate the Ultimate Aerosmith mixtape, and side A of that mixtape is deep cuts. So we're gonna have our favorite nine Aerosmith deep cuts on side A, and side B is live tracks. So all of our favorite Aerosmith live tracks will be going on side B. So you got a lot of deep cuts on here tonight. If one of those roll, we'll actually have to have a discussion about, is it going to replace something currently on side A of our mixtape, which right now includes Rats in the Cellar, Moving Out, No More, No More, Girl Keeps Coming Apart, Bone to Bone, Coney Island Whitefish Boy, Seasons of Wither, Reefer Headed Woman, Walking the Dog, and The Movie. So this could be interesting. You have one single on your die, which is Taste of India, which is a promotional single off of Nine Lives. So if we roll that one, it'll be in the conversation for what we're calling the Ultimate Aerosmith Top 10, which right now has 10 tracks on it. So if we spin that one, it may replace one of these songs currently on the Ultimate Aerosmith Top 10. And that's kind of how the show works. Scott, you don't know a ton of Aerosmith. Do you know these six songs? Are you looking forward to anyone in particular?
Well, of course I don't. The only one I know, of course, is the one that we have off of one of my favorite albums, Permanent Vacation. Apart from that, I don't think I've heard, at least knowingly heard, any of those other songs yet. So whatever we spend, I'm looking forward to it. It's probably going to be something I'm not familiar with.
All right. Deuces the Driving Cat. Is there anything on the die that you're looking forward to here tonight?
I don't know. I mean, Brother John picked five songs where I'm like, wow, those are some great deep cuts. But before we get started, I do have to ask Brother John, and it's no judgment at all, this is a judgment-free zone, what led you to, or what leads you to want to add Taste of India particularly onto the die? And I'm only asking because it's really not one of my favorite Aerosmith albums. If I had like a one-shot deal to talk about it, I get where the other five are coming from. That's the one I was like, oh, a Nine Lives song, right? What took you down that road?
I remember that that was one of the albums that came out when I remembered coming out, because I when I was in high school, junior high school, whatever it was, that's when like a Pump, Get a Grip, all those came out. So I remember when this one came out, and this was different from those because they had big hits on those albums. So when Just Push Play came out, Nine Lives, sorry, I get them mixed up. I thought, like, all right, you know, this is good. It's going down the same road, but wasn't as successful. But when I heard it, that was one of the songs that kind of stuck out, because I thought that it was, I thought it was different, but it was still really good for them. Like, it was kind of a novelty song, but it was still kind of Aerosmith in a way. So I was, like I said, that's one of those that just always kind of stuck out to me. The album as a whole, I don't remember, but that's one of them that I do.
Yeah, I'm actually, because you picked it, I was looking forward to hearing it tonight. I was just curious why, because it does stick out kind of like a sore thumb to next to
Yeah.
the other ones. But yeah, no, awesome, dude.
That was your because you picked one that we had covered that you didn't know we had covered, and I think that was the one that you replaced it with, wasn't it? Taste of India was your last edition.
Maybe I think originally I think I had what did I say? I picked Jailbait, and I actually think
Jailbait.
I remember that was one of the early episodes, and I think I remember you guys doing it, but I'm like, oh, I'll throw it out there anyway in case I'm wrong. And that's the one that I was told, nope, you got to pick an alternate.
Well, and you picked better than Jailbreak, so thank you very much for that. Better John, is there one of those six that you're specifically rooting for here tonight?
I mean, I like all of them, but I'm kind of in the mood to hear Heart's Done Time because I really love that track.
It's a great track. I'm looking forward to that one too. For me, I'm kind of rooting for Chiquita. I think Night in the Ruts is a very underrated album,
Yeah.
and this is a banger off that album. So, without further ado, we're going to shake this dice here, and we're going to roll, and we're going to come up with Bright Light Fright. So none of us got the track we wanted, but we're getting one off Draw the Line. John Mottola, maybe tell us a little bit about why you put Bright Light Fright on the die.
So, as anybody knows that heard, I think I talked about on the Aerosmith episode that I was on with on Scott's show. The big reason I got into Aerosmith was is in high school, my friend Derek, who was also on the grunge episode of Scott's show with me, got me into him because like the way I'm a huge Kiss fan. So, shout out because Corey's wearing a Kiss shirt today. The way that I was to Kiss, Derek was to Aerosmith. I just remember the first time going into his house, he had just Aerosmith stuff everywhere. You know, when we were like 12 years old, he'd already been to a bunch of their concerts. So he really got me into him, and I'd never really considered him before. And when I started listening to him, I went down that road. So by the time I got to Draw the Line, we just heard the Steven Tyler stuff. So when I heard the Joe Perry pick up a vocal, I was like, wow, this is really good. Which is one of the reason I put two Joe Perry songs on the dice is because I love his voice and I love the couple of songs where he took lead on. And this was the first one where I'm like, yeah, this rocks.
There's a lot of great stuff on Draw the Line, but they were so disjointed as a band at this moment in their history,
Yeah.
right? Where they even recorded an entire song with when Joe was just laid up in bed for the full day, so he didn't even play on it. And actually, Bright Light Fright was one he presented to the band, and they hated it. He kind of forced its way onto the album. He said it was kind of inspired by the Sex Pistols, but yeah, nobody in the band really liked it. But it's been a while since I heard it, but I don't want to tip my hand, but we'll see how this one goes. Scott, I know. You probably don't know this song at all, or really probably the album Draw the Line, but this was very close to Aerosmith kind of breaking up. It was Night in the Ruts where they actually just kind of fractured off. Joe Perry left, and Brad Whitford a little bit later on than that, but they were deep in the weeds at this point doing the Draw the Line, where a lot of them don't even really remember recording it. So it's going to be an interesting track to cover here tonight.
I think so. And your story about them recording the song with Joe being out, it kind of reminded me when the Bengals recorded Walk Like an Egyptian, the record company had put that electronic bass drum and tambourine track on. And when the drummer went in to record her part, they said, "We don't need you. We've already got it." So now when they do that song live, which they do at every single show, she has to leave her drum set, come out front and shake a tambourine. And I remember her being just so pissed off about it, which I would be. I mean, if I was the drummer and they're like, "Yeah, we just replaced you with some MIDI track," that would be pretty annoying to me. So I wonder how he felt about that.
John Deuces Mariano, do you have any thoughts on the album Draw the Line, or the song Bright Light Fright?
No, it's not one I constantly go to, but I don't ever skip it when I have my Aerosmith catalog on random. That's why, like I like I said at the top, like five of these songs, I really dig that they're deep cuts, and I really dig the deep cuts that they are. This being one of them. Joe Perry heavy songs or like stuff from the Joe Perry project. I have mixed feelings on because it's a time of change in the band, right? And mm-hmm. I generally like stuff shortly before this and shortly after this, but not so much where we are right now. So I'm curious to see how I react to it tonight.
All right, well, let's get into it. It's a short song, only 2 minutes, 22 seconds, but here's Bright Light Fright by Joe Perry from the album Draw the Line.
It's a short song because it's like a car crash into it. Like, does anybody else feel like we started like at like 30 seconds into the song?
Well, it starts like a Sex Pistols song, doesn't it? Like Joe Perry said, it was inspired by the Sex Pistols, and you can totally get that just from that intro.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. It just sounds like, all right, let's just go.
You can tell they're doing a lot of coke and a lot of speed and stuff at that time, right?
And here I am, Corey, you know, I always go in a slightly different direction. Scott, you know, I go in this direction too. It feels like Joe is not a big fan of foreplay. Like just based on this, it feels like, you know, hey, Joe, you want to go to the bedroom? His pants are off. He's ready to go. He doesn't even care what's happening next. Right. And before, and like you said, it's like a 2.5 minutes long and he's done. He's out. He's on to the next thing. He's making a sandwich.
Yeah. You know, my analogy was going to be a little different, but it's like when you pull the rip cord or whatever on the lawnmower, and then it just like jerks you forward and you're like, whoa, like that's how the song starts basically, which I think is cool. I like it because there's no fucking around. It's like, let's get to it, man. So
I'm trying to decide if I like the mix on it, but he's kind of soloing a little bit, so it's hard to tell. It does feel a little bit like they recorded and then he recorded on top of them, but it's early, so I'll have to see how it blends together.
He's a future seeker. He's talking about Zoom calls already, way back in 1977. The crisis at hand is I'm all out of Zoom. Yeah, maybe that's why they're rushing their way through the song, because he's all out of Zoom.
You know, it sounds like it was recorded in a garage to me. It
was recorded in an old house, if I remember correctly. Yeah, so okay. You're not far off. Yeah,
yeah. It definitely feels like almost like a 4-track recording. The drums being at that tempo should have a lot more power to them, but they're really kind of light hits on the snare and they're in the background. Definitely not a mix I'm used to hearing from Aerosmith. So it's throwing me off. And then with a completely different vocalist, it feels like when the Misfits decided to start up again after Glenn Danzig, and the identity of the band is not the band anymore.
But I remember Jack Douglas, the producer on the Behind the Music episode, was saying that it was just a bunch of people, drugs and guns, and they were just shooting guns off all over the place, and they were all just coked out of their heads. It just wasn't a very, very good environment conducive to, you know, creating music. So I think he just wanted to kind of get out of there without getting shot.
Could be. Well, and you have to wonder from the record company's standpoint, obviously there's a producer there that can see what's going on. I always wonder in these situations why somebody didn't, or maybe somebody did and it didn't get approved, but hey, these guys are not in good shape right now. Maybe we should wait 3 or 4 months. Let's get them some help and come back and record an album and see what they've got. But this isn't working.
All these industries, right? I know I'm preaching to the choir right now because I know you know stuff like this, but I'm just going to use recent events in movies, right, that I know of. So they released the Justice League, Warner Brothers did, as an incomplete movie, so the executives could get their bonuses that year. All of this is about chasing the almighty dollar, so they could give two shits about the condition of the band. And I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
You're probably right. I guess it just seems to me like with a lot of bands, I suppose you could do that. With a band with the legacy of Aerosmith, I guess I would just expect a little bit more. But I mean, you're talking, you know, a pretty huge series there. So,
But was it like at this point, like I know they were a popular band, but I don't feel like they really had a true legacy to their second leg. Right? Like the comeback's kind of really what the story of Aerosmith is. And then it becomes the argument about the two eras and how great they are. But they weren't held at these highest heights at this point, right? And like, you know, when you don't clump them in with The Who, you don't clump them in with Led Zeppelin at this point, right? Now we look back and it's almost like we look in the back of the baseball card and we're like, look at all the, what they've done over time, right? And they got to do it over in two spots. It's like when Michael Jordan won three championships, retired, and that was enough. He was great. But his legend is really, and then he comes back and wins another three.
So really permanent vacation, you think, is where that started?
I actually think probably Pump is where that started, right? Mm-hmm. I think you know, Walk This Way and permanent vacation get them kind of back in the consciousness, mm-hmm. but the legend really grows with how big Pump gets, and then Get a Grip just takes them to a new level.
Yeah, around this time, they released, of course, Towards the Attic and Rocks came out before this one. So they were a fairly big band in America, but they weren't what they would become kind of in their Geffen years. So,
mm-hmm. Multi-generational. I can't find my shoes. The only thing on TV is the Good
Morning News. I feel bad he can't find his shoes. I imagine that's a real junkie problem. When you're in an estate in upstate New York and trying to record an album, you can't find your shoes. But I wanted better John point out something about Joe Perry's vocals. And I think Joe Perry sounds pretty damn good on this.
Yeah, I mean, I love his vocals. I think he's really he's just really going for it. I mean, he's not a vocalist like Steven Tyler. He's just very I don't know if I want to say bluesy, but he definitely has like a really cool tone to it that works in these kind of like songs, this one and the other one, Walk On Down, that he does, which is just kind of a, I don't know, an up tempo, really rocking kind of blues mm-hmm. type of song. And I think the when we were talking about the mix earlier too, it's very, it, like one of you guys said, very garagey sounding, very loose. And that, I think that's one of the reasons I like it is because it's just really underproduced. And I mean, I really love a lot of deep tracks because a lot of times they're almost like some of them have like a demo kind of quality, mm-hmm. which this one does.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I like his voice. I think if they're going for the Sex Pistols thing, I think they're really nailing it.
Guarantee you that sax player was on Zoom too.
Yeah, he sounded like it. Yeah,
that was something.
That was definitely a Steven Tyler-ish solo. You know what Steven would be singing over a guitar solo if there was one.
And shocking, we talked about this on other tracks. You know, Steven Tyler always has to assert himself somewhere in the track to let everyone know he's still there. Right? He hasn't done that yet. We're almost halfway through the song. We're a minute in, and no Steven Tyler yet. He actually didn't show up to the chorus. So kind of surprising.
else think that Joe Perry had this song go on this album? So Steven would just shut the fuck up and let him play.
It is weird to hear an entire guitar solo.
Well, I mean, like he threw a couple of a little ow in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that was his ow, right? Like, is that
No, this is definitely Joe Perry's song, and it's the more that I listen to it, the more that I realize why I like it again is because it doesn't let up. It just keeps going. And I mean, he's got classic Joe Perry guitar solo. I don't know. And just even his vocals have that kind of, you know, he's always walking around and he looks like he's always really chill and everything like that. He's just kind of like even keel, even when he's playing. It's like, that's how he sings, even though this is like a really high energy song. I just kind of feel like it's a great balance of his personality where he like wails on the guitar. But while he's singing, he's just kind of like, yeah.
It sounds like something that could have been on Toys in the Attic, just sped up at double speed. Right. It just sounds like a classic Aerosmith song, just twice as fast.
Yeah.
John Mottola, you're more of a guitar player than I am. Did I hear a little bit of flange on that guitar solo?
It's hard for me to tell if it's that or if it was the way that it was mic'd, you know, the way it was produced, because the whole song has this really kind of roomy vibe to it, just kind of a natural like room echo to it. But either way, I love the tone on his guitar.
Yeah, me too.
It just kind of buried in the mix though, wasn't it? Like it's hardly like we're listening with headphones on and you can hear it, but it's really kind of low in the mix compared to other Joe Perry, early 70s Joe Perry guitar solos.
Well, I think that's the thing about it being so raw. It's like, you know, normally you would back some of the music off a little bit and give some space for the guitar solo to shine. And they just didn't do that. They just kept everything at, you know, full volume and didn't leave any space for it, but put it in on top of it anyway. It does make it difficult to define what the playing is on it in some spots, but I like the sound of it overall. I like the energy of it too. The energy doesn't really match the vocals, though. I mean, the vocals are sung a little more straightforward than the solo. It's kind of like that sax part where the sax part like just comes in with all this explosive energy. And then we go back to like a more dry, straightforward vocal. And then the guitar comes in with that explosive energy again. It's a real interesting back and forth on this one.
You notice the sax hasn't come back yet. I think the sax player had a heart attack after completing that first salvo. And he's just laying there dead on the floor.
Too much zoom.
Too much zoom. and you know, it's funny, this song almost didn't make the album because Joe Perry had a whole cookie tin full of demos that he lost. And Bright Light Fright, like almost completed, was in that cookie tin. And so Jack Douglas was pissed off at him because he lost this cookie tin full of demos. But his wife at the time found the cookie tin and we got Bright Light Fright on the album. So we got 24 seconds left to go. Let's finish this one out. All right, that's Bright Light Fright from 1977's Draw the Line. I just love those lyrics. It's just like, just a junkie whacked out on speed. It's Sunlight Blues, I can't find my shoes, the fucking news. Like, it's just, oh, it's, this is just indicative of where the band was at this time. Just coked out of their heads, not even know what the fuck's going on, but still able to bust out a great up-tempo jam. Let's start with Scott Haskins. Scott, what are your thoughts on Bright Light Fright?
I think it's a pretty cool song. It's nice to hear a different vocal and to hear a different style, one that doesn't really feel like it has to be everywhere. I like the sax solo and a guitar solo in there. I think the song, for as short as it is, really delivered a lot. The only thing I found a little bit repetitive was kind of the lyrics. I wish maybe they had come up with an alternative verse or chorus or something to say, because it did feel a bit repetitive. But overall, the song's got great energy, and I dug it.
All right, John Mariano, what were your thoughts?
I'm confused how you could be loaded on Zoom and come up with decent lyrics. Like, I think that expectation, you got to lower that bar, Scott. A lot.
I'm sorry.
No. In fairness to the band, they were not in a good place when this song was written. And I guess I'm going to credit Joe with the lyrics for this. But I enjoy it. I'm debating on where I feel it belongs. If I feel it belongs on the mixtape, I really dig this song. Like where I'm struggling, and it would be the same thing if I were hearing like a cover or something, is this really an Aerosmith song, or is this a Joe Perry song, or are those one and the same? And this is telling part of that Aerosmith story and part that doesn't get told enough of the band kind of at odds with each other. And that like I almost have like this internal battle on where I'm at right now with the mixtape.
I'm kind of in the same boat. Better, John, you can kind of see on your screen here, hopefully, that this is currently side A of the mixtape. Rats mm-hmm. in the Cellar, Moving Out, No More, No More, Girl Keeps Coming Apart, Bone to Bone, Seasons of Wither, Reefer-Headed Woman, Walking the Dog, and the Movie. So the question is, do we take one of those songs off the mixtape and substitute it with Bright Light Fright? So let's start with you. You see those nine tracks there. We just heard Bright Light Fright. What are your thoughts? Should we take something off side A of the mixtape and put Bright Light Fright on it?
Wow, that's a tough one, because I did pick this song, but I know looking at this, I can see what our goal is here. And after what John just said, I'm kind of thinking that maybe it doesn't belong on there. For those reasons, because it definitely, I think it's a great song. It just like it's a snapshot in time of the band. It's a great high energy song. It's definitely a Joe Perry song. I feel like it would be at home in a couple of years on the first project album, which is great. But mm-hmm. if you're trying to represent the deep cuts of Aerosmith and you only have a limited amount of space, then I would say probably keep side A as it is, as much as I love this song.
All right. Well said, Scott Haskin. Let's go to you. We have one vote in A. Which way are you leaning?
I'm really torn, because I think if we're doing an ultimate tape, I feel like there's some responsibility to representing those kind of eras, you know, to say like, if this is a comprehensive collection of Aerosmith songs. So to not have one, you know, with Joe as the singer is kind of, I don't know if we're really representing the band, but is it better than any of the songs that we have on there?
Mm-hmm.
I like the song, but I don't think that it's better than any of them that we have on there now. So I would have to say, I would keep that argument for maybe another song and see if there's something else I think would be a better fit for the tape. But I would say, I think we're good the way we are right now.
All right. And I know for myself, I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm not opposed to putting a Joe track on side A of the mixtape, but I'm thinking of something like Combination or Walk On Down. I thought maybe would be a better representation. Mm-hmm. Even something like Stop Messing Around from Honkin' on Bobo. I could see having a better spot maybe than Bright Light Fright, even though I did really dig the song. When you're looking at songs that are going to make the mixtape, we already have one on side B, Kings and Queens from Classics Live 1. That's a track off Draw the Line. So I'm cool with what we have on side A right now. The only one, apologies, Scott, that I could see maybe swapping out is the Movie.
I knew it.
I'm cool with keeping the Movie for another week, though. John Mariano, which way are you going to go?
So I was like, you know what, we should keep this song, because I'm a big fan, and both Scott and Corey can tell you that when we have a guest on, we should respect that guest and their opinions. And what we should do is we should try to fight to get their song on the mixtape, even if it's just for a week, just to make them smile a little bit. And I was like, you know what? I'd be willing to take one of my songs off, but I don't feel like that's generous enough. So I was going to nominate the Movie, because, you know, I'm a really good guy like that. And that's where I was going to sit, but you guys have already outvoted me. So my vote's a moot point. I just wanted to share it so Scott knew how much I cared.
I feel attacked. Well, after hard I fought to get that back on after the last time you kicked it off the mixtape.
And it's funny because I voted against my own song because of an argument that you made, and you were going to vote for it. but I would agree that if we were going to represent a Joe Perry song, then one of the later songs, which was a little more fleshed out, better produced, when the band was kind of firing on all cylinders, would probably be a better representation on this, like Walk On Down, for instance.
Yep, I totally agree. So we're saying
kind of hard for me, but I'll get over it.
So this one doesn't get on the mixtape, and you know, we'll get over it. It's fine. There'll be another song next week, and we'll see how that fares. So that's Bright Light Fright from Draw the Line. Hopefully everyone enjoyed the song. I know I did. Let's put a cap on this one here. Let's start with Scott Haskin. What do you got coming up? What would you like to plug, and where can the fine folks find you online?
Well, by about the time that this aired, I think the third book in my Universal Court series should be about to come out in late January. And a new album should be out in February. It's called The Shattered Room. And apart from that, you can find me here on this podcast. You can find me on Uriah Heep, the Magician's podcast that started up on January 10th for a couple more seasons, and hopefully some special bonus episodes coming out. And everything is at www.scotthaskin.com.
Perfect. Thank you very much. And John Mottola, you mentioned as we're recording this, you guys are on a little bit of a break, but you got to be coming back with new episodes anytime soon.
When I said that we were on a break, we're on a not really on a recording break. Nate and I usually take December off because work is really busy for us. So we kind of bank a bunch of episodes for those 4 weeks. So there's really no interruption in our flow. So we will be having new episodes come out every week. They're just the references might be a little old by the time they come out. But we're definitely cranking them out. And Scott's the one that keeps us honest. He's just like, you've never missed a week, and we don't want to disappoint him. So that's what keeps me going personally. So you can find us at deeppurplepodcast.com, and that's our website. And you can find all the information there about episodes, Patreon, where you can listen to the show, Apple Music, Spotify, and our Twitter and Instagram handles are there as well, if anybody wants to listen.
And John Mariano, where can the folks find you?
Oh, you can find me at John Mariano Wheaton, New York, or whatever, however you pronounce it. But John Mariano NY on Twitter. I can be there being like kind of like a grumpy cat, but more like a grumpy dog.
Well said. And you can find me, doing too many podcasts. I'm on And the Podcast Will Rock with Mark Kammeyer. Every Friday that drops, we're breaking down the Van Halen catalog one track at a time. We're also doing Backtracks theme music. John and I talking everything music and movies. We just did a great one with Mark Kammeyer. It would be released by the time you're listening to this one, but go back and listen to the Who Wants to Live Forever show from Highlander. It was a lot of fun. And if you want to just yell at me generally at Twitter, I'm at CD Morissette. And with that, I'd like to thank our guest, John Mottola. I'd like to thank Scott. I'd like to thank John Mariano, and thank you for listening. And as always, we will give the final word to Steven Tyler.